Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, introspective podcast conversations, helping build and protect your business one podcast at a time, a Kazsource production. I was all over the opportunity to chat with the co-founder and CEO of the company that helped 100,000 small businesses get $8 billion in relief funding while saving 1.2 million jobs along the way. I am talking about the company Lendio and their leader, Brock Blake. This episode exists because of Kazsource. Kazsource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at Kazsource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kazcontent.com. In this episode, we discuss creating Lendio, why it's so important to leverage media and technology, and of course, we collide sports and entrepreneurship. Brock brings so much experience and wisdom to this episode. You'll hear him talking about being intellectually honest, a major dipping point in his career, and he'll even drop an amazing Winston Churchill quote, but not in some average way. No, this Winston Churchill quote was behind one of the biggest decisions he ever made at Lendio, and it had to do with the PPP, the Paycheck Protection Program. And with that, we welcome the co-founder and CEO of Lendio, Brock Blake. This is a crazy time we're obviously living in, and you guys have helped a lot of small businesses. And we're recording this, we're getting towards the end of 2020, and there's a lot of time to reflect. And I think about this podcast a lot of ways as introspective, you know, for myself, for the person I'm talking to, or people that might be listening. And one of the things I was thinking about is, what are you thinking about, right? Like, what are you thinking about right now with all that's happened, all that's going on in your business, with your family? What are you thinking about?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a great place to start.
Yeah.
Man, I'll start from the business perspective. I mean, it's just been a roller coaster of a year. From the beginning of the year when the economy was just on firing on all cylinders, and all of a sudden mid-March, rug gets pulled out from under all of us, and there's quarantines and lockdowns and business owners that you could just feel the weight of their anxiety and on their shoulders of thinking, man, this business I've built for my entire life, and it's just, I'm watching it just slip through my fingers, and there's hardly anything I can do about it. And then our choice to kind of jump all in on and PPP, and we can talk about that. And then that kind of settling down where, and lenders still aren't lending again. So now we're kind of like the highest of highs back down to like very little loan volume. That ramping back up and then thinking about, you know, what's coming in 2021, like we're going through a dark winter of sorts. And I just saw a stat that 50% of business owners in 2021 will need access to capital because, I mean, they're just barely hanging on by a thread, and many of them have closed their doors. And so those same type of emotions that I feel as I think about the company we've built and the ups and downs, the journey we've gone on, is similar in kind of with my family, wife, four kids. And at first their schools were shut down and all their sports and then dance and activities and everything. And then just slowly by slowly kind of coming back. And now there's this scare. Should we lock it back down? And it's like day to day. It's day to day living.
Yeah.
There's a lot of optimism right now. Fortunately, we think there's good news around the vaccine. And I think there's some positive days ahead. And there's a lot of things that this pandemic did for me that was like ground you back to your roots, like what's most important. And there's a lot of things that we take for granted when life is good that you take a step back and start thinking about when you go through a scenario like this. So anyway,
yeah,
that was a loaded question.
I
could talk the rest of the podcast about this, but those are some initial thoughts.
Yeah, we'll go in different directions off of it. And you don't really start loaded. We just have a conversation, but it's just something that's come to mind because you never know what someone's thinking about right now. And clearly you're thinking about other people, right? Your family, small businesses. And it says it even on Lendio's website, and I thought it was pretty cool, saving small businesses one loan at a time. We talk about this podcast, like helping build and protect your business one podcast at a time. We talk about create that one piece of content for our content marketing company. Just don't overthink it. Like create that one piece and just keep going from there. Like little wins day by day, like you talked about. And patience is huge. Like, you got to move fast, but you have to have patience. And these are just things that we're thinking about. And anytime I talk, I'm a lot of times just talking to myself, right? I'm sure you do the same thing. I mean, and especially now, right? Like, you're working remotely, you're working from home. Perhaps you might not see the team all the time. I mean, it's a mixed bag. Like you said, people were going back. Your kids were not in school. Then they're kind of going back to school. Then they're kind of maybe, I don't know what's going to happen next. And it's just enough to drive people crazy.
Yeah, I love your concept, just one at a time, right? Focusing on the one. Our mission at Lendio is fuel the American dream, helping, and which is a focus on the small business owner, and they have a dream to grow their business. And we've tweaked that during this pandemic to save the American dream. But we believe in that. We believe in, like, focus on the individual and what they're going through and how do you best help them. And if you do that and you compound the next individual, all of a sudden then you have the collective results of all the individuals you've helped is pretty significant. In our case, you know, we've helped over 220,000 businesses secure over $10 billion of funding. And the economic impact of that is enormous. But it's like you said, I love that kind of, it's like, I believe line upon line, precept upon precept, day after day, and stack those little wins on top of each other. And pretty soon you'll be able to look back at some of those things and realize, wow, we've made an impact, even though it started with one.
Yeah. How do you stay grounded in all of it? Because like you said, you got the family, you got four kids, you got your business, you have all these businesses, like, because that business owner that says maybe they need $20,000 loan, whatever that might be, they're maybe not relying specifically just on you because you have a team of people. I get it, but it's what you created. It's what you built. And how do you stay grounded in all that? Because it's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, no question. I mean, first of all, just the people that I'm surrounded with, my wife, who's an incredible person and supportive, and my team at work, and I have my executive admin and others that are like, just surround yourself with people that are better than you, that are smarter than you, that inspire you. That's one. Number two is being present, be where your feet are. And so if I'm at work, man, I am just cranking. Like, there is not a minute of the day that is wasted. Like, every minute of my day is totally planned out, trying to be extremely as efficient as possible. But then when I'm home, I try and be present. When I'm on a date night with my wife or with my kids or throwing the ball in the backyard or at their dance recital, it's like, try and be where your feet are, be present. And I think that's really critical. And then third is be intentional. I've learned some of these and I've got a long ways to go, but like I've realized what's important to me and what sustains me through the ups and downs. And, you know, whether it's morning personal kind of scripture study or meditation, morning workouts every single morning, dinner with my family, date night with my wife, and these things that, and, you know, every once in a while kind of shutting it down and taking the family on vacation and spending quality time outside of where you're not thinking about it. But then, like I said, when you're at the office, when you're at work, you're in it. So, you know, I've kind of mapped out my day, my week, my month to say, what is long-term sustainable? What are the things that really energize me and get the energy to continue with all the weight and the responsibility? And those are a few things that I've found, and there's a lot more, but I've strived to be intentional about those things.
It sounds, there's a lot of habits in there, right? You talk about the morning workout, you talk about dinner with the, it's just things that this is what's going to happen and you don't even have to think about doing it. Or obviously habits are critical in building the systems and processes to stay on track. And you also said something about you try. And it sounds to me like, and maybe you do, you don't beat yourself up. Like, you will not succeed at times. You will fail. It won't work out. And perhaps like, man, I wish I was more present at this moment. And I wasn't. Like, there's this own awareness, like the fact that you can even think that far and like be aware of what just took place. And you can take a step back and be like, and think through it, and maybe apologize or do better the next time or whatever that is. There's a part of you as a leader to say, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to try things and it's not going to work, but you're not going to beat yourself up, or at least you're going to work to be better at it. Is that something that you think about? Is it just something that's come about because of your experience of failing, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think about it. And I think some of the learnings that are the most valuable in life are the times that you've failed and you didn't do it right. And you were reflective and you're like, what? I wish I would have done that differently. I wish I would have done that better. Next time I'm in that situation, this is how I would like to handle it. That's what life is. It's a constant fail, learn, improve, fail, learn, improve, with some wins along the way. But any learnings that I've had around being intentional or my schedule or trying to be effective with my time are all because of mistakes that I've made along the way that have been painful or costly or regretful.
Yeah. Lendio wasn't your first run at this, was it?
No.
Yeah. So what happened beforehand?
Yeah. So right out of school, I started a business. I won an entrepreneurial competition, won $50,000 to go start a business. And the business was one where I could use that money to start anything. And as I was interviewing, I was thinking about buying businesses or trying to start something. And as I was interviewing a bunch of different business owners, I realized the biggest problem that I kept hearing over and over again from these business owners was that they needed capital and they didn't know how or where to get it. And so the way that we tried to solve that originally was to connect an entrepreneur to an investor, not to lending sources. It was to private venture capitalists and angel investors. And I mean, we spent 5 years at it and we grew it from 0 to 10 million and we did some really good things, but the business model was completely flawed. We didn't build it with technology. The very few percentage of business owners were actually going to be able to raise money from an angel or venture capitalist. And so they'd come in and we were charging the business owner for our services. And it was just flawed. I mean, business owners coming to you to get money and yet you're charging them and you can't guarantee they're going to get money. And you're trying to make it up. And we didn't have a lot of technology and a bunch of other things. So, I mean, I made every mistake in the book. I banged my head against the wall trying to figure this thing out. And it's just flawed. So 2010, like I said, we were about $10 million in revenue. And finally, my co-founder, Trent Miskin, and I kind of just had a heart-to-heart where it was like, this isn't working. Like, we can keep trying to do this, but this is not going to work. And so we started identifying at nights and weekends, like, what are the core flaws of this business? We know that the market opportunity is there. We know business owners need capital, and that's a very large pain point. But what are the flaws in the business model? And we started mapping those out and really trying to be as intellectually honest as we possibly could. You can't lie to yourself around what works and what doesn't, right? And we identified those things. And then we said, well, if we had kind of a fresh restart after everything we've learned, what is it that we would do differently? What would we focus on? How would the business model be different? And we mapped that out and we thought, you know what? Why don't we have a fresh restart? It's going to be really painful, but it's painful already. So anyways, we planned it all out and we had basically shut down our previous business. It's called Funding Universe, going from $10 million to zero overnight, going from 80 employees to 5.
Wow.
And we were going to rebrand and restart. And we thought we had, okay, we've got the perfect plan. And it was the most painful experience that I've gone through. It did not go anywhere like we had planned it. And we're like, man, that $10 million in revenue sure would be nice when you're back at zero and you're going a few months and you're trying to figure out how to make ends meet. And anyways, we ended up ripping the Band-Aid off and just going for it. And it was painful for a few years, but finally we kind of figured it out. And I'm sure glad now looking back that we had the stomach, I guess, to say to just go for it.
Did you have enough support behind you? I mean, I would guess your family was behind you and all this and your partner's family, or there's enough people, I'm guessing, that were supporting of it, because I would imagine there's some people to be like, what are you doing?
There were a lot of people that were questioning, including ourselves.
Right.
Like, yeah. Did we just do that? Was that the right decision?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. And we were second guessing that for a while. So okay. Yeah, we definitely had, we had good support, but a lot of question marks surrounding it. And you're only right when all of a sudden you start to realize that there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Sure.
And it's a much different business, much better business, much more scalable, bigger opportunity, more technology, better customer. Everything's better.
Yeah.
But it was not easy to get to where we are.
You said technology a couple of times. You said, we didn't build your first company. We didn't build it with technology. And you see a lot of businesses that are, obviously, here we are sitting on a Zoom call. There's technology surrounding all of us right now. And, and there's a lot of different ways to look at software. And, you know, I've even seen companies that they're scaling through technology, right? Is a very basic one. Calendly was a very basic way that we scheduled this. I didn't have to have an assistant call up somebody else. It was all done through automation. The Zoom link was automatically created. We didn't have to do anything. Again, very simple technology, but it's actually a really big deal. If you would have woken up from 20-year nap and you saw this, you'd be like, how did that just happen?
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. Are you seeing companies, obviously you saw it yourself, that technology is a big deal. Like, again, you're taking it to another level and you're probably tied in with the banks and you're tied in with businesses and there's so many things changing hands. You could go to next level stuff, but clearly technology has a lot of positives to it and way to build your business. And if you're not using technology, like you said, we didn't have enough technology. And that's a reason why that company possibly didn't make it.
Yeah. When you're trying to piece things together, I mean, it just depends on the type of business you're trying to build, right? If you're trying to build a good, solid lifestyle business that is, and sometimes there's less headache and things like that, you know, there's a lot of things you can do without leveraging technology. But if you're trying to grow and scale a business as large as you can, and for us, we were trying to piece it together and through email and spreadsheets and just like bubblegum and duct tape. So for us to have technology that where we build a full lending platform, we have integrations with the banks, we have integration to be able to pull bank data and credit reports and the matching algorithm. So a business owner can go online and all that happens behind the scenes. And then they can comparison shop the different loan options. And a lot of that, there's just no way that we'd have a business without that. One of our team members came to us yesterday with a business idea and he presented this company that he wanted to partner with. And I was aware of a competitive company to the company he presented. And I looked at both of them. One was just all done through like Word documents and PDFs. And the other one had this beautiful, sexy UI, all done online, integrations to pull different reports and things like that. And I'm saying, well, if we're going to partner with either one of these organizations, and we are getting hundreds of thousands of business owners coming to us a day, there's no way we can send our referrals to the company that's doing it all through PDF and Word doc, like, and manually behind the scenes, it's just going to fall apart. There's just too many mistakes along the way. And so that precludes us from partnering with them. So anyway, I'm a big believer in leveraging technology to build scalable businesses, to build really great customer experiences. And it's been a very significant part of who we are at Lendio and our growth story.
Sure. And I think the other leverage point that we're talking about is this conversation right now, right? So you're talking about leverage technology, leverage media as well. So I would imagine there's a big part of you that clearly believes in media, that appearing on podcasts, getting the message out there, not necessarily in a, hey, call us up at blah, 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 and here we are and trying to sell you and pitch you. No, we're telling stories. We're sharing information. What is it with podcasting and you?
Yeah. I mean, for us, I think that there's a sincerity to the story around our desire to help small businesses, then you don't need to go out and try and like sell it. You just talk about the experiences you've had and the learnings you've gone through and the failures you've made and the wins you've had. And like, we're trying to build a 100-year business. We're not trying to build a flash in the pan and just like take advantage of the moment or an opportunity or a customer or whatever it is. Like, is this for the long term? And so I don't think about podcasts as like, okay, how many customers did we get that from that one show? It is more about let's build a brand that is long-term and sustainable and that tells our story and someone will hear it. And somewhere down the road, they'll be talking to a friend that's a business owner that needs financing and they'll say, have you heard about Lendio's story? It's incredible or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I believe in the media stuff, mostly because again, we think about it, building a long-term sustainable business. This is just one step at a time,
yep,
little by little, thinking about the long term.
Why do CEOs or business leaders get caught up in, you just kind of mentioned it, the ROI of it, right? I'm going to appear on this, or I'm going to do this, or we're going to create this type of content. What did we make from that? It's impossible to know, right? Why do you think that they're so caught up, not they, or just people in general, because you have to go through this process. Perhaps you have to fail. And then eventually you realize like, no, I can go tell these stories and maybe I can't measure the ROI, but that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, because the pressure to leverage the resources you have to drive results is so high. Mm-hmm. And so you're always being measured with how did you leverage your assets and to generate X? That might be revenue, that might be ROI, that might be whatever. And if you're leveraging your resources to grow the business, because that's your financial scorecard, and you're doing these podcasts and other things that maybe don't have direct ROI along the way, then you're looked at as like an amazing CEO, right? But if you're doing these things that you can't exactly attribute ROI to them, and you don't have the financial results that back it up, now you're looking at, wow, he or she just wasted their time doing these things to build their brand and didn't actually translate to anything. And so, I mean, I think it's natural that every person, just like every sports coach, whether it's NFL or NBA or college football or whatever it is, they're measured by their win.
Yeah.
And their loss. That's their scorecard.
Yeah.
Now, if they can do that scorecard and then they're amazing in the community and people in the community just love, like you think of Dabo Sweeney or whatever. I'm a big sports guy.
But sure.
People love him in the community.
Yeah.
But if he didn't win any game, it's because he's top five in the country every year.
Right.
And he knows how to win.
Yep.
If he did all that stuff in the community and he wasn't winning, he wouldn't last there, like not even a year.
Right.
So it's that balance that is a really difficult balance for a CEO to handle.
Sure. And I love the sports analogies. We have this platform called Sportsypreneur SE, and we collide sports and entrepreneurship. So it's like, it's going perfectly into there.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And we'll continue to talk about that. I do think there is one thing that I'll, on the sports side, where sports is a very zero-sum game, right? Like, your two teams, Coastal Carolina plays BYU. One team has to lose,
hey,
right?
Easy, I know. Easy. Oh, come on. I'm trying to forget about that game.
I know. And it's brutal. And you know what the coolest thing is? And I saw you actually tweeted this. The fact that BYU showed up to go and play in this game. And really, Coastal Carolina had the most to gain in a game like that. BYU was there. And I think people are going to remember like the game. And the fact that they played and it was like, wow, when it was on a Wednesday or something and they show up on a Saturday night and they're playing the game. And but in sports, maybe I just countered myself and that was like there was a positive sum environment in that. But sports normally is a zero sum where if you're appearing on podcast, there can be a positive sum where we can have some gains. You could have some gains. You always look at like a podcast and I get to talk to you, Brock. Like I get to have these conversations and ask a successful CEO with family and doing all these things. And I can take notes and do all this stuff. And there's positive in all of it. And then we get to feature you and showcase what Lendio's doing and what you're doing. And I think that's a way to look at it. So that's where the sports thing maybe goes on the other side, but it's absolutely right. And at the end of the day, your results matter. And if you don't have the results, now, you could do the best branding in the world. If you don't know how to sell or if you don't know how to create a product and drive revenue, well, how can you hire employees, right?
Yeah, and I think there's definitely benefits from podcasts or other media, you know, things like that. There's so many learning opportunities. It's growth. It's interesting. It causes you to reflect and be thoughtful. And so I think there's a bunch of benefits that come from it that help you be a better leader, a better CEO, and hopefully translates into it later. And I believe in it. I think there's times where I was kind of like, if I were to get on that show, what will it help me? How many customers are we going to measure, get from it? Oh, well, none. Okay, well, that I can actually directly attribute, then I'm not going to do it. Anyways, I think that that's the short-sighted way of thinking about things.
Sure. Well, and you would use the word pressure and you talk about pressure becomes your ally. So there are these pressures and there's all sorts of pressures. And sometimes we put pressures on ourselves that weren't even maybe there. But if you lean into it, is what I hear you saying. If you lean into that a little bit, that it's your ally, like use it. It fuels you. It fuels your company. And maybe it's to prove people that you can do it, like that we can change. We can pivot. We can completely change on a dime what we're doing and we can make this happen.
Yeah. The word pressure to me is I was able to coach the ninth grade. I was the head coach for the ninth grade football team here this fall. And my son was the quarterback and we ended up winning the championship. It was an incredible season and whatnot. But one of the games, the semifinal game, one of the boys right before the game said, I've never been so nervous in my life. And I stopped everything. I pulled the team together and I said, how many are nervous? And they all kind of instantly raised their hand. And I said, you're feeling pressure, right? And they're like, yeah, we feel like we're so nervous about this. You feel pressure. And I said, pressure, this was something that was taught to me by a good friend. Pressure is a privilege. And they're like, what? What does that mean? And I said, how many other teams in the league would switch spots with you right now to be in the semifinal game? And they said, every single team. And I said, every single person would love to be in this spot where you feel pressure. Because pressure means that you're in a unique scenario that it means something. There's something at stake. And that's a privilege. You know, not everyone gets to the semifinal game. Not everyone gets to the championship game. And as the stakes get higher, the privilege gets higher, the pressure increases. It's a more unique opportunity that you have that others would love to have a part of. So sometimes we beat ourselves up around that. And I think taking that, turning that a little bit and turning it to the positive mindset of saying, yeah, I feel pressure. That means that it's meaningful.
Yeah.
and I get to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And how do I turn that pressure into a privilege and realize it's privilege and turn it into an opportunity that I can run with? And that changed the game for those boys. They're ninth graders and they took a deep breath and calmed down. And it was a phenomenal scenario. But again, it's not mine. Someone taught it to me that pressure is a privilege.
I love that, like you just said. And it makes me think of a couple of things. One, I'm originally from Buffalo, New York. And so I was there when the Bills went to 4 Super Bowls. And then when they had all these playoff games, it'd be freezing cold in Buffalo and playing sub-zero temperatures. It's snowing, the wind's blowing, and people are questioning if they can win. And Marv Levy had this line, and they have it on videos, where would you rather be than right here, right now?
Right.
And it kind of gets into what you're talking about. There's something though, and then you look at the Bills or take an example, like you mentioned BYU. BYU took a chance and they said, we're going to go play this game. We could lose. They're not thinking that, right? But ultimately, everyone knows one team's going to win, one team's going to lose. Your ninth grade boys, they could have lost that game. And it's interesting because, especially the bigger you get, if they show up, Clemson, as your example, last year, they get to the championship and they actually lose the game. You know, they've won before, but that team has to deal with that downside, the questions, the whatever. And then they got to get back up and do it all over again. It's really difficult because once you put your heart and soul into something, it might not work out. And I think it prevents people from even doing it, right? They'd rather, oh man, I don't know if I want to play Alabama because we might lose to them. Whereas someone else is saying, I want a shot at the title. I want a shot to beat those guys. There's a lot in that. It's just like you're saying, it's a privilege to even be here. Go out there, take a deep breath and let's go get it. And you know what? You still might not win, but at least you showed up, right? And we talk about, I had a podcast on here. It's a youth basketball association here in Charlotte, North Carolina. They said, there's three feelings in sports. It's winning, it's losing, and not participating. And not participating is the worst one. I see the same thing in building a business. Winning, losing, and not participating. Hey, you know what? You gave it a shot. If Lendio never existed, but you gave it a shot and that first company was it, you know what? You showed up. You were there on the field and you tried your best. And maybe it didn't work out. Whatever. You tried. And what can we learn from that? So, I mean, go off of that if you will, but I think about that a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen that quote, the man in the arena.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what I think about there. It's like, I'd rather go against the best. I'm a competitive guy. I'm the youngest of 6 and 5 boys. And so I was always fighting and scrapping out on the backyard of football or basketball or soccer or whatever it was. And looking up to my brothers, trying to like live up to their standard or compete with them. And I'm like, I would rather play the best and know where I stand and lose than go beat a team by whatever. And this is, we're talking sports here, but
sure.
Like in life. For me, this is why we have Lendio versus keeping the business we had before. It's like, I'd rather go big and try and build a legacy and build a 100-year business and the impact we can have on the lives of millions of people. I'd rather go for it. And that's why we did PPP, honestly. We went all in on PPP and we flew close to the sun and it could have been a massive failure. There were moments where I thought it was going to be a massive failure, where I was cuddled up fetal position here on this floor saying, I'm not sure we're going to make it.
Yeah.
I'd rather go all in and go for it.
Yeah.
Be calculated and be smart.
Sure.
And be prepared and all those things, but go for it. Go for that legacy than to not have tried, because the growth that you'll have during those moments will be tremendous. And I've experienced that even if you fail. And if you do fail, the growth will even be more significant.
Sure.
And it's fulfilling.
Sure.
Even though it's heartache.
Yeah, that's not easy. It's something must have called you to that, because you obviously advocate for small businesses. You like the little guy mentality. And I think we'd probably agree that small business drives so much of our economy. And it was founded. You think of the immigrant mindset, they would come and they would create these small businesses. And they were so important for their families, for the community. That's how we got here. And a lot of those small businesses became some of the biggest companies in the world today, right? But they started somewhere. They started out of their garage. They started in some warehouse. They just figured it out. But then all this happens, a pandemic comes, and we start hearing about there's going to be a PPP loan. There's going to be opportunity for small businesses. At what point did you say, let's get into supporting and getting and helping out between the lenders and the small businesses that need the community that needs access to these loans as quickly as possible? When did that happen for you?
Yeah, so the pandemic hit, it was about mid-March. And within about a week, Congress was talking about passing the CARES Act. And they outlined the stimulus package for consumers and small businesses, being the Paycheck Protection Program, allowing every small business owner in America to get access to a loan. as I started to really think about that, I was watching kind of the market around us, seeing other lenders and other players saying, we're just pausing lending. We're going to sit on the sideline. We're going to wait it out. And they did layoffs and furloughs, and it was kind of the preserve cash. It was the safe route. As I was looking at it, I realized every business owner in America is going to need a loan, and they're going to need someone to help them. And you're going to have to leverage technology to be able to accept the applications online and match them up to a lot of lenders. And I think this is an enormous opportunity. And there's way more unknowns than knowns. And this is an enormous risk. And we just raised a round of capital, so we had fresh capital, but I didn't want to just go burn it all taking a shot. But as I studied it out and realized, you know what, this is our moment, I sent a text to our board where I basically declared to our board, I want to go for it. And it was a Winston Churchill text or quote. It says this: to every man or woman, there comes in his lifetime that special moment when he is figuratively tapped on the shoulder and offered a chance to do a very special thing, unique to him and fitted to his talents. What a tragedy if that moment finds him unprepared or unqualified for that which would be his finest hour. And I said, hashtag our moment. And I said, we're going for it. The opportunity is too great. The moment is extremely exciting, and there are millions of business owners that need help. Someone's going to do that. It might as well be us, because we're prepared for this moment. We were tapped on the shoulder. And then I started rallying our organization and said, we need to help as many small business owners as we can. And again, we had no idea what that meant. We didn't know what the risk we were going to take. But the story that came from there, where we literally almost crashed and burned like 5 times and put it all on the line. But it was an amazing, amazing experience, and one that was 10 times harder than anything I've ever done in my career, but 10 times more meaningful, no question.
100,000 small businesses I saw, $8 billion in relief funding. And it started with like that thought. And then you read that quote, which, by the way, I mean, you got to read that quote for the next year's championship game before the kids run out there. Cause you just picture, you know, like they're just going to get emotional. It's like a movie.
Right.
That's the final scene of the movie. But that's incredible. And as we work on a daily basis with small business owners, it's just to have people like yourself, to have companies like Lendio, that's what we sit back and think about like this year, like what we're grateful for. We have to be grateful for people like yourself that are out there doing it for the right reasons and building something bigger than just that. Like there's more to come, and you're just not a PPP or CARES Act company that's going to be gone like a pop-up Halloween store, right? Like there's something way bigger than this. And like you said, largest online marketplace for small business loans. Like go to the lendio.com website and take a look around and see like, this is legit. I love it. I think it's a clean looking site. It's fast moving. I mean, clearly there's something big going on there, but to pivot in a moment, to get that tap on the shoulder to say, let's go all in with this. I think that's a great story. And those are the stories. And that's why someone would listen to this and say, I want to go work at Lendio, or I want to just be around this person. And how do I get involved in this culture of this company and what they're building? And there's a lot of good connecting points there. What do you see though happening? So now here we are, right? Because that was what, a 2.5 month program for the most part for companies to get them through payroll. And I mean, that was April. Now we're December when we're recording this. Yep. And so again, we don't know what's going to happen. We can't predict it. We don't know the direction of the vaccines and all these things, but a lot of small businesses, a lot of people are going to need another round of funding. I mean, from the sounds of it, it sounds like another relief bill is going to get passed at some level. What is exactly going to be in it? I don't know. What do you see happening? What's the future, like the short-term future, I should say, the next few months or year for small business owners and lenders like yourself, lending companies, I should say.
Yeah, small business owners right now are suffering. The PPP program, like you said, lasted 2.5 months. And since then, they've been trying to get by. And in some states, they opened up some of the communities and helped with restaurants and stuff like that. But all that's being locked down again. And you've seen numbers where over 20% of businesses have been closed permanently and over 10 million jobs that haven't been recovered. And they've gone through all their first round of PPP. So like I've been a proponent of Congress needs to take politics and set it aside and think about the economy and think about small business owners and come to a compromise and get this relief bill passed. Because right now, it's personal agendas by the different kind of talking heads within politics that is just incredibly frustrating. And it's delaying it day after day, week after week, now months that they haven't passed another stimulus package. I'm optimistic, but I'm also worried that pride will set in and they'll just dig their heels in on both sides and they won't get to a compromise. And then we'll have to wait until President Biden gets inaugurated And that's a couple more months before anything's going to happen. So it's sad. I hope that this will get passed right away because they certainly need it. And then they'll need capital after that. The capital that they're getting now is just going to help them get through these days, get right. through the winter.
Right.
And then coming out of that, to really get back into a position of strength, they're going to need capital for marketing and growth and hiring to get back on their feet and get into a positive kind of growth mindset. So I'm really sympathetic or empathetic, I mean, to the small business owner that's out there and what they're going through. And we're advocating as much as we can for them to get them capital to make it through these challenging days.
There's a lot of complications with starting a business. Like, I think of it this way. It's never been easier to start a business, but it's also been never harder to start a business. Like, there's just so many things, and every state's different, and there's all these rules, and what do you even do? And then I need to go talk to a CPA and attorney, and you need those people involved in the process, but it's like, you forgot to fill out this, you forgot to do, like, you have to keep track of so much. It's so complicated. And then you have this situation where you have the PPP. Okay, so someone gets funded, and now we're going through this process of the forgiveness portion of it. And you have to prove, and sure enough, you hear the stories of people went out and bought a Ferrari with the money, right? Obviously, that's bad. But how far are they going to take the forgiveness? Are they really going to spend all their time with the, I don't know how many loans or how much money exactly went out top of my head, but how much time, and are there even people around to go through this? Or is it all being done through technology that they're going to go through and say, who's going to get forgiven? Who's not? Who are they going to sit down and go through it line by line? Like, what's going to happen with the forgiveness of just even that first round?
Yeah. So we're spending a lot of time with customers, helping them through that forgiveness process. And in my opinion, there needs to be a healthy balance of accountability and kind of streamlined process. For the streamlined process, like some of the smaller loans that are the sole prop, single employer businesses that are like less than $25,000, like auto forgive those and be done with it because there's not a lot that they can go and document to show. But a lot of people were throwing out the number 150,000 and below to be auto forgiven. I don't believe it should be 150,000. I think the threshold should be lower because the flip side of that, there needs to be accountability. We doled out $500 billion of taxpayer money to small businesses. And there's nothing that infuriates me more than if I'm giving someone a handout and I know that they took, and I'm trying to be charitable, right? This is my personal life. And they took that money and they went and blew it on something stupid. It's like, wait, what? You know, like you should have been using that for food or your basic needs, not doing something stupid. And it's the same thing with taxpayer dollars. If we hand out this money and they're going out and spending it on Ferraris and trips to Vegas and gambling and all that, then we should be upset as a nation, as a people. So how do you create accountability, but then make the application process of, let's call it 25,000 to 150. How do you make that as streamlined as possible? You don't want business owners spending a bunch of time and hours and having to hire some expensive accountant to go through that process. And so I do think there is a balance. It's not an either or. It's not streamlined or accountable. It's you can do both. And that's what I hope will be able to happen. And I think like that's where it's headed.
Yeah. There's obviously a wide range of thought on this. Like you'll have an opinion, someone else will have an opinion. You've appeared on CNBC even during a time of what's happening and what direction we go. Do you feel like people are listening? Is it just people banging their heads against the wall? Like we can say it till we're blue in the face, but they have their own agenda and they're not paying attention. The politicians, that is, aren't paying attention. How do you see it being received by the people that are actually ultimately making the decision here?
Yeah, well, there's advocacy groups on both sides.
Yeah.
Everyone has an opinion. And I do think that it will come more to the compromise that I've outlined because there are advocacy groups on both sides.
Yeah.
On one side, you have people like talking about all the fraud, that all this fraud. And, all, and so that scares people, scares politicians. Like, I don't want to just turn my blind eye to the fraud that has occurred. On the other hand, you've got all these advocacy groups saying, we can't make our business owners spend all this time, energy, money going through the forgiveness process. And so I do think because it's so vocal on both sides that there will be some sort of compromise in the middle. But right now, the problem is I just wish they would come and draw a line in the sand and say, this is our stance, because right now it's still a lot of confusion, a lot of up in the air. People are kind of putting everything on pause and not moving forward because there's not clarity around it. And so that creates concern and lack of movement.
Yeah. Well, you talked about what you guys had done with the PPP and 1.2 million jobs saved. It's for a certain period of time, right? Until the next round is needed, until more is happening. And so they have to take care of it, whether it's forgiveness quickly, get to the next bill quickly, get access to more funds quickly. Those types of things have to happen, because that 1.2 million jobs, like, we could talk a year from now and it might be 2.5 million jobs saved, right? Because you have the opportunity to at least serve all of these people that are out there. No, I think it's critical that there's transparency and everyone's kept up to date as to what's going to happen. And I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. I appreciate just the stories that you bring. And there's something I want to ask you about, because I noticed that you're a soccer player at BYU. So you talk about sports a lot. You talk about coaching. You obviously played sports. You're a huge BYU fan, a Utah Jazz fan, considered maybe more like the small market team, but a fun team, a team that people are rooting for and watching and are taking teams to the brink that have just large, like an LA Lakers type of organization. Again, it screams like small business in a way. Obviously, Utah Jazz have amazing players and pay a big payroll, just like any NBA team does. But there's a lot in that. So I see even the teams that you're pulling for, that which has naturally happened, have the same like vibe that you bring to the table and the coaching that you bring to the table, which is really cool. But I want to take a step back too with the soccer thing. My son plays soccer. He's a goalkeeper. What position did you play at BYU?
I played forward.
Okay.
When I was at BYU playing soccer, we didn't have any scholarships. And so the majority of our team, it's amazing to watch that group of individuals that I played with. There are more than a dozen. I mean, the team's only like 25 people, and there's more than half of them are successful entrepreneurs. And I'm not sure why, but I kind of go back and think about what we went through collectively. First of all, we won a lot, but it wasn't about necessarily that. It was the fact that we were that underdog. We weren't on the football team getting our housing and our books and everything paid for. So we had to go to school, keep up our grades. And then we had to figure out how to pay and go to soccer, which was usually 4 hours a day at least between your practices and everything else, film and weight room and all that. Then we had to figure out how to make money. A lot of us came from lower to middle income families and we didn't have a silver spoon in our mouth. And so we had to figure out how to, in the short time frame, it wasn't school and wasn't soccer. How do you actually make money to pay for your school, pay for your housing, pay for your books? And it made us really, in my opinion, like, you're the underdog. You have to be scrappy. You have to be creative. You got to think outside the box and you got to be efficient. You got to be efficient with your time. And so anyways, a lot of what we went through together has produced this incredible class of entrepreneurs that I just think it's really a fun story to be able to tell. They should do a documentary on it someday.
Yeah.
But anyways, it is part of that underdog mentality for sure that's just been ingrained in me.
Well, there's definitely something about sports leading to entrepreneurship, because there's a commitment, there's accountability, competition, habits, which we talked about before, because those things become habits. And when you get later in life, it doesn't matter what it is, right? You see in the military a lot of times, you see it in sports, and then it leads into that next step. There's this transition though that exists from sports to life after sports. We see it with professional athletes, right? A career could end at any moment. And whether it's at a high level of sports or even at the smallest level, because you feel on top of the world when you're playing. And it's just so much fun. And it's like what you were like, your whole childhood a lot of times was based around that sport and you going and playing that sport. And then one day it just possibly ends. Like, maybe you can continue playing in some other ways. How was it like for you? I mean, was it an exciting thing? Like, hey, I'm going to move on to this next chapter. Soccer's done for me right now. Like, maybe I'll go play in a men's league at some point. But or was it difficult to say, man, I wish I was out there with the guys and practicing and training and playing in those and winning those big games? Was that a difficult transition for you?
It wasn't. I mean, I knew I wasn't going to go play professional soccer. I was good enough to play college and played well there, but wasn't good enough to go do some to make a career out of it. Plus, there's no money to be made in playing soccer. Like, it's hard to even support your family. But what I did miss, so it wasn't about missing, like, you miss the rush of the game and some of that, but you also miss just being around that group and that competitive drive and that competitive spirit every single day. So you miss those aspects and you try and recreate them in other ways, in other aspects of your life. And you miss the camaraderie of the team. But I also think you can take those learnings and go build that same type of environment, not through sports, but through other aspects of your life, like building a business.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, kind of one of the reasons why I love it.
Yeah.
And it's meaningful.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Well, Brock, man, I appreciate it. We'll continue to stay in touch, continue to follow what you have going on. If you want to get in touch with you, I'm sure people can figure out how to reach you, but let them know, like, what's the best way someone could learn more about Lendio and learn more about yourself?
Yeah, for any business owners out there, if you need access to capital, lendio.com, it's a free service. We help you comparison shop multiple loan options. Anyone else that wants to connect, you can find me on Twitter, @RockBlake, and connect to me through there or through lendio.com as well. But Eric, really enjoyed the conversation. I love what you're doing. I appreciate you having me on. It's been a fun conversation.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate you saying that. And if nothing else, just you go follow you on Twitter and you keep updated on what's going on with BYU and where they are in the rankings and during the games. And that's what it's all about, right? It's having fun with it. It's frustrating. Like you said, I'm not trying to rub some salt in the wound with it. No, it's more about really just taking in these games. And I think more than anything else, BYU showing up on the field and playing. I mean, Zach Wilson, your quarterback's got a bright future ahead of him, and it's a lot of fun to watch. And I think that situation of falling 1 yard short, it stinks in the time, but let's see what he does, learning some stuff from that. I think there's a lot to come. So thank you again, Brock. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
One of my favorite things about CadSource is the opportunity to chat with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or visit us at CadSource.com. Thank you for listening to this CadSource production, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. This episode exists because of CadSource. CadSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CadSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kezcontent.com.